suicidal thoughts can also feel like a way to solve life's problems. So when we're feeling incredibly overwhelmed, when we have a high level of distress, sometimes we can get tunnel vision, right? And really what that does is it narrows the potential solutions to our problems. And it might feel like there's only one door left open, and that door might be suicide. That if we're getting overwhelmed with different life struggles and we just want them to go away, right? So maybe I feel like a burden to my family. So my thoughts might be, if I wasn't here, my family wouldn't have to deal with this, right? Suicide is a potential solution for that. Maybe it is feeling so much pressure, so much pain, you just want that to go away. Suicidal thoughts can feel like a solution to that, right? So these thoughts are really centering on a very dangerous solution to problems that don't otherwise feel like you can manage. So when we think about the purposes that suicidal thoughts can serve, I think it also brings up the question of, but why do some people's mind turn to suicide and other people's don't? To answer that, we really kind of need to take a step back and think about the whole picture. So the first thing we can think about are early life factors. Right, and some of these are biological factors. So for some of us, from the time that we are born, we simply experience things differently. Some of us, for feelings hit harder, they stay longer, and it takes a long time for us to get back to a state of baseline. Right, and for other people, when those emotions are high, you will also be more likely to act impulsively on them, to want to get rid of them, to want to fix them, to want to change them without thinking about the long-term consequences, right? So we can think about these emotions and these emotional experiences maybe like a volume knob, right? So for some people, that volume knob is turned up high and it is stuck there, right? The emotions are loud and it's hard to hear anything else. For some people, that volume knob is low and maybe they have control of it. But really, it's hard to navigate life when that volume knob is so high, right? It's hard to find a moment of calm, and it's hard to think about solutions, right? And these are just natural temperaments. They're not flaws in who we are as humans. They're truly no different than some people being taller and some people having curly hair, right? We're simply born to experience emotions differently. The problem is that when we're born to experience emotions really strongly, when distress hits, it can be a lot harder to navigate life. These factors can also be compounded by early childhood environments, right? So imagine that you are a child, you're out playing on the swing set, and you fall down. You go inside because your knee is scraped and it hurt. You tell your parents about it, and the response is, oh my goodness, what happened? How are you? Let's get that fixed up, right? That sends the message that your emotions are valid, and you can come to me when things go wrong. On the contrary, you come inside and your parents say, ah, oh, toughen up, you're fine, go back out and play. That can send the message that you need to deal with your emotions on your own. It's not that big of a deal. When these experiences happen over and over and over again throughout childhood, and when they pertain to different areas of your life, so not only physical pain, but it might be pain that came from interpersonal situations, your own anxiety or pressures that you're placing on yourself, that these things can become an instruction manual for how to deal with emotions. And those might carry forward for the rest of your life, right? So really the interaction of these two things can really impact how we navigate life as an adult. They don't necessarily decide our future, but they can definitely shape the path that we start on. Right, so we enter our adulthood with having these key vulnerabilities in how we can cope with and handle emotions.